in the 60s and 70s at the oceans once morning low clouds and fog clear back to the coast. 80s and maybe some low 90s in the warmest spots inland. 58 outside KSCO studios right here in Santa Cruz. Traffic is moving fine northbound and southbound 1 into Santa Cruz from Aptos and getting over 17 wide open, but do anticipate some slow traffic later on this afternoon as a lot of people head into Santa Cruz to spend this summer day at the beach. 10:06, time for hour one of the Saturday special. Here's MZ.
And there's Rick O'Shea. How you doing, Rick?
Not bad. Yourself?
Good, good. It's so nice to see your smiling face. Well, actually, I can't see your smiling face because
and I'm kind of hidden. There it is.
Behind the monitor. Okay, there it is. It's true. It's definitely you. So last week we had an extra meaty sales of Kay's commentary books because Kay was here and she is again. Now, what did we do differently last week that we hadn't done before? Well, I talked to Mom here, and so we're going to do it again. Maybe it'll work again. Maybe more and more people will come down and chat with you, and you can autograph a copy of their book, right?
That would be wonderful.
Yeah. So anyhow.
And I'm here, and I'm happy.
Why should people purchase your book? Be honest.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, because it's really very interesting, and it's very easy reading because it's a compilation of many commentaries, and none of them are longer than 4 minutes. So you can just read one or two and then put it down.
Once you put down your book, you never want to pick it up again.
No, it's the opposite.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I think I got that wrong. I think that came out wrong. Well, you know what I'm trying to say, right?
Yes.
So anyhow, come on down to 2300 Portola Drive, your favorite radio station. Get to meet Kay and get a copy of her book. And the suggested donation is what?
Is $25 for the first book
and
$15 for all the other books whenever you purchase them, even if it's close to Christmas.
Now, they make the greatest gifts.
Yes.
If you want to do someone a favor, give them a copy, a signed copy, and even an
autographed,
inscribed copy of Kay's, where you say something nice and personal.
Yes.
So anyhow, the most important reason of all to buy Kay's book is that it supports 100% of the proceeds. Support your favorite radio station, okay?
That's
KSCO AM 1080. So, Ma, are you going to stay with us in the studio here until people come to buy your book? Or are you going to go out front?
No, I'll go out front.
Okay,
and
great.
You have the gentleman who's here has a very compelling message.
Okay, great. Well, let's start the show officially.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning, may we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today you know on KSCO Radio.
Hey there, morning, KSCO Land, it's MZ. And I am proud and happy to welcome you all to hour number one of the KSCO Saturday Special. I hope you'll stay tuned for hour number two of the Saturday Special. I hope you'll stay tuned to KSCO forever and never turn it off even in the sleep, because you never know what you might pick up even when you're sleeping. So we'll be on right up until noon. Stay with us.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
I was recently honored to meet a young man who served as an Army Ranger and elite member of the United States Army. His name is Justin Baker, and during the course of his service to protect you and me, he and several of his Ranger buddies were exposed to some chemicals and conditions that caused him to develop a serious case of type 1 diabetes, the bad kind that requires him to take multiple insulin injections each day just to survive. He was put on disability and honorably discharged from the Army with the assurance that he would be provided insulin and all required diabetic supplies for the rest of his life by the government. This has not happened. He has instead been subjected to a continuing nightmare of frustrations, destroyed personal credit, life-threatening diabetic comas, and more, all due to government obstinance and inaction. Meet Justin Baker on the next KSCO special this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, right here on Let's See If We Can Get Our Congressman Sam Farr to Do the Right Thing for This Warrior Radio, AM 1080 KSCO.
Justin Baker, good to see you. Good to see you here at KSCO Studio. Thanks for agreeing to come on with us.
Thank you for having me, MZ.
So, you and I haven't been acquainted all that long. It's probably less than a week, am I right?
Yeah, about a week and a half, maybe.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, so you are 30 years old,
mm-hmm.
Exactly half of my age. And I really admire you because you have served your country in a way that I would have liked to, but I was not able to because I had asthma as a kid, and I got a letter one day saying we're not going to draft you. so anyhow, I never had the pleasure to serve. You did, and how did this whole thing start? I mean, how old were you when you decided that you wanted to go into the Army?
I was about 21, or I had actually just turned 21, and I didn't really want to be in the restaurant business or do construction at the time, and those were the two main industries that my friends were getting into and I had been in already.
Any family connections there, or...?
As far as the military or?
Well, no, as far as the construction industry and restaurant, or maybe your family had owned restaurants or anything like that.
Well, right now I'm actually working at my uncle's cabinet shop in Prunedale. And several of my other family members do, one of my uncles has a paving company.
Uh-huh.
So those were two, possible avenues to take, but,
And did you grow up around here?
I grew up in Prunedale.
Uh-huh.
Right by Salinas there. And I've been out here my whole life.
Ah, okay. And so, so you enlisted in what year?
Early 2003.
Okay, so we already had a war going on.
Mm-hmm. We were already in Afghanistan, and I had a gut feeling that we were going into Iraq, and I had a gut feeling that President Bush may reinstate the draft. And so I figured instead of being drafted, I would go down to the recruiter's office and see how hard it would be to get into a special operations unit.
So let's talk about that. What is special operations? I remember Vietnam, and they used to talk about the Green Berets, and they must have been special operations, right?
Yeah, they are in the special operations community. Uh-huh. Navy SEALs, Special Forces, Army Rangers, Marine Force Recon.
Mm-hmm.
Every branch has their own little special ops team, or in the Army's case, okay. They have several.
Okay, and so you just knew that there were some special forces. You wanted to find out all about them. And was it the Army that you were always zeroed in on, or might it have been in other branches of the service?
I went into the Marine Recruiting Office and the Army Recruiting Office, and I knew... if I did it, I wanted to be a ground soldier. I didn't want to be in a plane or on a boat. The main reason I ended up choosing Army Ranger is because my best friend's dad was an Army Ranger in Vietnam. And so I grew up kind of listening to some of his stories, and he talked about camaraderie and, having 100 brothers.
Uh-huh.
And they loved each other like family, And he did... and had so many exciting stories growing up. I mean, to this day, I see him on a regular basis, and he's definitely a mentor for me and was the deciding factor in that, I guess you could say, to go Army Ranger.
Right, because you had heard these stories all your life, I guess. And so,
yeah.
Well, Well, okay, so then tell us what happened. You decided to go for the Ranger. Now, how do you got to apply for it? You got to go through the basic training, and is it a different basic training? How does that whole thing work?
It's the same basic training, but there's several different courses that you go through after you graduate from basic, and it's kind of like a selection process from day one, you know. As soon as you get to basic training, you start to see them drop like flies. People don't have what it takes to make it through basic training.
Uh-huh.
You know, and every level that you progress to after you graduate from basic, you go to your advanced intelligence training. And for me, I was doing satellite communications. And then I graduated from that after 6 months, and then I went to airborne for a month, had to learn how to jump out of airplanes. And then from there, then I went to the Ranger Induction Program, which is like a selection course for the lower enlisted guys that they have to get through in order to make it into the 75th Ranger Regiment.
So that was pretty grueling, I suspect.
Yeah, they're trying to weed out the weak. That's uh-huh. the whole point of the whole program. And they do
and
a
by
really
that
good
time, there
it.
Aren't many weak because they've made it through the basic, in it, right?
No, yeah, I mean, you're looking at a pretty strong-minded group of individuals. They're physically in amazing condition. And they're, I mean, doing things that the average person couldn't or wouldn't want to do.
Right.
You know. But you still see them dropping like flies.
Uh-huh. How many would you say dropped like flies from your group?
In the Ranger Induction Program?
Yeah, as a percentage, maybe.
Maybe up to 50%.
Really?
Yeah. It's really tough, you know. They only want the people that really want to be there.
Uh-huh.
And they do this little psychological mind trick out on the in the field. On some of the training exercises in that course. And I was there in the winter. And I remember one night we had to sleep with just, they gave us one little blanket and we were sleeping directly on the ground. And it was 15 degrees outside. And you don't take your boots off, you don't take anything off because you need all that extra insulation you can get.
Sure.
And so we literally ended up in a row laying together, like 50 guys laying front to back,
uh-huh.
just to retain as much body heat as we could because it was so cold.
Where was that?
That was in Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And it gets pretty cold there in the winter. And that night they told us it was 15 degrees at 4 a.m. We didn't sleep. They didn't give us much time to sleep, but the time they did give us to sleep, it was so cold and miserable that you couldn't sleep if you wanted to. You know.
Okay, now that was how far into your process of having joined the service? Three, 4 months?
No, I was, all my training took me 11 months and 2 weeks to get through the training and get into the unit.
Okay.
And so that was about 8 or 9 months in for me. Mm-hmm. And,
Did you know where you were headed? Did you know you were going to be headed?
There's three Ranger battalions that you could possibly be assigned to, and then there's the Ranger Regiment headquarters, which is out at Fort Benning, Georgia. So there was only four possibilities.
Okay.
And at that point, I was shooting for Fort Lewis, Washington, because my family's here, so I would have been closer to home.
Ah.
But because of the satellite communications job that I had, they basically chose for me. Like, the infantrymen got to choose, where do you want to be? We need 5 guys to go to Washington. We need 5 guys to stay at Fort Benning. And we need 8 guys to go to Savannah, Georgia, to the 1st Ranger Battalion. But they told me, you're going to stay right here at Fort Benning. And so that was my duty station throughout the rest of my time in the military.
Okay. Now, how was it? Well, tell us what happened then. Then just go through
Well, the day that you graduate from the Ranger induction, they do a little graduation ceremony. And from that point on, after the graduation, you know, everybody gets to see their family, if any of the family flew out or whatnot. And then they bring all the guys back to the barracks, and that's when they tell you where you're going to go.
Yeah.
And so they told me where I was going to go, and we were all happy because we had just graduated, and all right, it's going to get easier from here. And that was not the case at all, actually. my team leader, he ended up being my team leader, Sergeant Ricky Howe, came to pick us up, and there was three of us that had the job that we had all gone to school for.
The satellite
communications. Yeah. And so he came to pick us up, and the whole signal detachment is out of regiment headquarters, which is above the battalions. They basically tell the battalions what to do. And Sergeant Howe came and picked us up and began immediately to treat us like dirt. And it was at that point.
Is that just the way it's done, or was that his particular personality?
There's no end to the selection course. It's constant. I mean, you could have your foot in the door and make a mistake, and they'll get rid of you. You know, you have to uphold the highest standards.
So it's like An Officer and a Gentleman, the movie with Richard Gere.
Yeah. They will only want the best.
But you're saying even after you graduate, like, so that isn't like Richard Gere's movie, because you know you saw Officer and a Gentleman, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a never ending process. You know, you prove yourself every day. You have to prove yourself and prove yourself and prove yourself. And
so this sergeant who treated you like dirt, did you ultimately earn his respect? And
yeah, he's actually one of my best friends. I haven't spoken with him in a few years, but he would give his life for me. And basically the reason that they're so tough on you is because they want to make sure that you would give your life for them.
Uh-huh.
And they show you that they would lay their life down for you if it became the case. And I ended up going to Afghanistan with him. He's a great guy, really good guy, and I'm glad I got to serve with him.
So tell us what that experience was like in Afghanistan.
Well, I was grateful that I had chosen to go in special operations. You can immediately see the difference in the discipline level of some of your bigger army soldiers versus the special operations soldier. And this is, I kind of knew this going in because of my best friend's father being a Ranger.
Sure.
He's like, you know, you don't want to go into combat with anyone less than the best. And so that's why I told my recruiter, if you want me to sign up, and I think the recruiters get a bonus for signing guys. I told him, if you want me to sign up, I want an Army Ranger contract. And so, you know, I kind of went in knowing what I wanted, and he had to play ball with me and give me that.
Okay, so there you are, you know, right smack in the middle of all of that in Afghanistan. What's it like? I mean, I guess you had gone through some pretty rigorous training, so you probably weren't in shock or anything. But just what goes through your head? What do you observe? What's it like?
Well, it's culture shock, definitely. Within the first few days of being there, you realize that Americans in America have it made. You know, there's no indoor plumbing over there. Those people are trying to find any kind of work that they can. The average Afghan family lives on less than $1 a day. And I remember we used to buy their money as like a souvenir, because since we had invaded, their dollar had crashed. I think they called their money rupees, and the rupee was worthless. So there's all these kids out running around with stacks of Afghan currency, and it's worth less than pennies, you know. I bought a stack of Afghan money one day for like $5 or something. And for him, he just made a fortune off me. Uh-huh. You know, he looked at me and he's like, stupid American. Because I gave him five American dollars for basically a handful of paper that was worth nothing. But I honestly, I liked the Afghan people.
Uh-huh.
They were hardworking. You know, they were just living the way that they always had.
How many tours of duty did you do?
I did two tours during 2004. Okay. And then it wasn't long after that. I went into Ranger School, and Ranger School is where the diabetes happened.
Okay, well, now I want to talk, before we get into the whole diabetes thing, I want to talk a little bit more about what it was like pre-diabetes when there was nothing wrong with you. Okay.
What you say
you went in and you want to go in with people who would give their life for you, and you would give their life for them. Did any of that happen? Did you experience any of that?
There was a few firefights that I was involved in, and even to still today, most of my Army buddies, you know, that haven't been injured and sent home are still in the military. You don't leave the special operations community. It's a way of life.
So it's career, you know.
Yeah.
And it would have been for you if you hadn't gotten sick?
I was seriously considering it because I was good at what I did. When I first got to the Ranger Regiment, the first week we were there, the platoon first sergeant, or the detachment first sergeant, First Sergeant Adams, he ended up being one of the main male role models in my life, and gave me a lot of opportunity. He wanted to see what we were capable of, all the new guys, you know, and there was three or four of us that all arrived together. So the first Monday that we were there, we took a physical fitness test. And out of a possible 300 points, I got a 337 on that first physical fitness test. And that immediately put me at the top of my detachment. I scored higher than everyone there that day. And so my first sergeant's just kind of sitting there looking at me, like rubbing his hands together, like, okay, we got something to work with here. And my other buddy, he did really well on two of the three events, but he was a smoker, so he couldn't really run the 2 mile that quick, you know. He spent half the time hacking up a lung, and I just smoked everyone out there that day. And so my first sergeant was pretty pleased with me right off the bat. The first day there, he was like, we got a decent group of new recruits, you know. And I continued on like that. I mean, as far as physical fitness went, I was at the top of my class almost all the way through all my training. And, up until I got the diabetes, I stayed at the top of the group, even at the Ranger Regiment, in the detachment that I was in. And the Rangers are super physical. I mean, it wasn't uncommon for us to go out at 6 o'clock on a Monday morning and do a 10-mile run and then go to the gym and work out hard for an hour. That was a regular occurrence. We would do at least one 8 to 10 miler every week, and on the average day we'd run 2, 3, or 5 miles. You know, so we were running about 30 to 40 miles a week on average, probably.
Okay. Jeez. I'm a diabetic myself, not type 1, I'm type 2. And I was first diagnosed in 1998, which is, 14 years ago. And I'm not insulin dependent. I still take pills, hope I don't become insulin dependent. You went from perfectly healthy to, you know, just sudden onset of type 1, where you do have to poke yourself with insulin numerous times a day.
Yep.
How did that happen? What kind of... My symptoms were classic. I didn't, you know, coma out or anything like that, but I was drinking just huge amounts of water, and peeing a lot.
Yeah.
And I had a suspicion that, you know, these are the classic symptoms that I had heard. Went into the doctor. He ordered a blood test and gave me a physical and called me a few days later and said, I was on a trip. He said, you got to come right back. We got to get you on medication immediately.
Mm-hmm.
How did it happen? What happened to you and how and why? And
well, I was telling your mom earlier, actually, I was describing it to her. The symptoms began in not being a diabetic and not ever actually asking my uncle, who is an insulin dependent, hey, what was it like when you became diabetic? I didn't know the symptoms. And so after 7 years now of being a diabetic, I can kind of like look back and create a timeline of when the breakdown began. And it was towards the end of basic training that symptoms began to show up. But it was only a year and a half or 2 years ago that I realized it. When your blood sugar gets up over 400 or 500, It's almost like what is that disease that old people get where they just fall asleep? Narcolepsy?
Yeah.
It's almost like that for me. Like you get super drowsy, and I mean, you know, it's hard to just keep your eyes open.
Right.
And towards the end of basic training, I had a couple days where I felt ill, and we were out in the field doing a training exercise, and I felt ill, and I couldn't keep myself awake. So there may have, I don't know, they were carbo loading us during basic, because you need a ton of energy. And I think the amount of carbohydrates that we were kind of being force-fed was... definitely a player in the game as far as my diabetes is concerned.
Yeah, especially if you're prone to it anyhow because of a family history.
Yeah, well, I had taken a blood test when I was a kid through a study that was done at Stanford, and they were trying to see if they could identify the gene. And my mom took it, I took it, and my sister took it. Luckily, my mom and my sister did not have the gene, but I do. I do have the gene. However,
And you knew that going in to the Army, yeah?
Yeah, but I mean, I was a high school wrestler. I never had a symptom, ever.
Right.
You know, I had no signs of it whatsoever. And I told the Army about it, too. Hey, I did this test when I was a kid, and they were like, well, you got no symptoms, and all your blood tests are great, and you're healthy enough. You do a kind of a special physical if you're going to go into the special ops branch of the military. Because you need to be a little bit better physically than
the average.
You
pass out with flying colors, you know, head of the class.
Yeah, right? I went through that, no problem. And, you know, they didn't pick up any ketones in the urine test. They didn't pick up anything in the blood. Everything came out just fine. And I actually have that documentation still to show that I was perfectly healthy going in.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I got through basic, had... no significant problems in the advanced intelligence training where I learned to do the satellite communications. That was purely a classroom environment, and I didn't have too much of a problem with it, except for after breakfast. Like, looking back now, after breakfast, I would get drowsy quite frequently, but I figured it was just from the rigorous physical training we did at 5 a.m. that
morning. High-carb breakfast.
High-carb food at the dining facility. And there wasn't a big focus on produce. You know, it was meat and potatoes and eggs.
Well, the meat was okay and the eggs were okay. Must have been lots of potatoes.
Classic American food is what they kind of serve at basic training.
It's not
so
bad, you know, depending upon the starch that you eat, you know.
Yeah.
Right?
But
maybe you became intolerant of even a tiny little bit of starch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't eat any kind of sugar or bread or rice now in any kind of amounts where I don't feel like nodding off, just like you described.
Yep. So I got through the 6 months of the advanced intelligence training. I went to airborne school. Had no real noticeable problems there. And then I went to the Ranger induction. And I didn't really have any significant problems in the schooling there either, you know. It wasn't really until I got to the unit that symptoms really began to bother me, I guess you could say.
And it was mostly being tired and almost feeling like you needed to go to sleep, you know.
Yeah, like
a lot.
It was hard to stay awake. And
mostly after meals.
Mostly in Afghanistan, actually, out in the field, on some combat missions. I'm like struggling to keep my eyes open, you know, and one day we ended up with mortars dropping around our truck, and I was struggling to keep my eyes open, you know, a pretty exciting event going on all around me.
Wow.
I'm really having a hard time staying awake.
So you must have figured there's something wrong. There's something wrong when that kind of
like
thing
I said,
can
I,
happen.
I didn't know the symptoms of the disease yet, and so I had no clue that I was diabetic at this point. None whatsoever. You know, I'm just thinking,
what'd you think it was?
I so tired?
Yeah, what'd you think it was?
I had no idea. When you're out in the field, though, you eat the MREs, which are the little bagged dehydrated.
What is it?
Meal ready to eat.
Uh-huh.
And it's like the old school World War II Navy SEA rations, except it's the newer updated model of that. You know, it's got a 50-year shelf life in the bag. And who knows what kind of preservatives those are to preserve that stuff that long.
Yeah.
But I don't think those are natural.
Uh-huh.
So Afghanistan is where the symptoms really kind of got a hold of me. And on my first deployment, I got through that with no issues. But on my second deployment, I got put out in the field, out in an outpost, little small outpost right by the Afghan-Pakistan border, where there was a lot of special ops missions going on. There was a couple of special ops groups out there with us that weren't Rangers, but different special ops groups. And my sergeant, my team leader, Sergeant Matt Flynn, he wanted to keep in shape while we were there. A lot of guys would get overseas and they'd stop exercising, just thinking, all right, I can take a break and just focus on combat and not worry about, you know, working out hard. Most of the Rangers stay in shape year-round. And so we would always be at the gym and stuff. But Sergeant Flynn wanted to continue to do runs and stuff like that, and I was his only teammate there, and he was my boss. So, you know, he liked to punish me a little bit and use me to punish him back. And so he would work us out pretty hard. And that was when it got to the point where I couldn't keep up with him. And this guy was, he was in good physical condition. He was an Army Ranger. But I was definitely dominant to him as far as the physical fitness aspect went. He could never keep up with me.
Yeah.
And it was at this point that I could not keep up with him anymore.
So there's an alarm that went off, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I placed it on altitude sickness. I thought, because we were at 9,000 feet, you know, and Georgia's basically at sea level.
Yeah.
And so I thought maybe it was just from, you know, Afghanistan's a mountainous country. It's way up there. And we were at the outpost that we were at, the forward operating base. We were at like 9,000. And so I'm thinking, you know, my body's not adjusted to it. And I told my sergeant, hey, give me some time. Like, I'm sluggish.
Oh.
And I think it's the altitude.
Yeah.
I never, that whole deployment, we were there for 3.5 or so months. I never caught back up to him. And when we came back, though, after, it's like the Olympians train in Colorado, mm-hmm. right? They train at higher elevations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we come back from Afghanistan and we get back to Georgia. And I can do full-out sprints on the five-mile runs. I can sprint 5 miles, like 80-90% of my total. As fast as I could run, I could probably do a 90% full-speed run for 5 straight miles and not even break a sweat. And I'm thinking, all right, man, I got extra oxygen in my blood. You know, I could sprint 5 miles straight without stopping, and I'm, you know, I'm feeling good. So I come back from Afghanistan, and the symptoms kind of
to
like...
To Fort Benning?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the symptoms went away almost completely, and it was amazing. That was the best shape I've ever been in, or the best I ever felt. I mean, generally doing a five-mile run, I was hating life, even though I was good at running. But I came back from Afghanistan, and I was ready for the Olympics, I'm telling you.
After these symptoms... Is that right?
Yeah. After having 3.5 months straight of feeling terrible.
Do you get it even now, looking back?
I do.
What's going on? What was happening?
Okay, the food at the dining facilities over there. There's a private contractor that provides, he does all the, it's one main like corporation that runs all the dining facilities for our military overseas. I can't remember the name of it now. But, you know, they had their little T-shirts and their hats, and they all work for the same company. And I've got to say, the food that they were serving us there was definitely not high grade. I heard it was like grade D meat that we were eating, and, you know, it just wasn't high quality. They're trying to mass produce and get food in every guy's belly. And the base at Bagram, which is the main base in Afghanistan at the time I was there, had over 11,000 American troops on it every day of the year. So they got to serve at least 33,000 meals a day, and that doesn't include the workers that are running the base for us. You know, so we're looking at 35 or 36,000 meals a day that got to be served, and it's total mass production. And I remember, like, a lot of the food did not taste the same as, you know, the food that we have here.
Yeah.
It tasted different, you know, and it was, I'd say it's feasible to believe it was probably a lot lower quality. And I came back. Oh, and another thing, we were eating tons of the MREs.
Uh-huh. Oh, I thought that's what you were talking about, no?
No, well, we were at a dining facility, so they would cook for us and stuff.
Oh.
But the food wasn't super great. And when we were on missions, we had MREs. We had to eat the MREs.
Okay, yeah.
Immediately after I was diagnosed with the diabetes, my Army doctor, he says, I don't ever want you to eat another MRE again, and I'm going to give you a profile so that your chain of command cannot force you to eat one if you're in the field. And I wasn't, back then, I didn't know enough about the pending disaster that I was facing with the VFW or the VA.
Yeah.
As far as problems with, you know, them handling my diabetes. And so I didn't understand.
So wait a minute. I had always assumed that when you were diagnosed with diabetes type 1, you know, just right off the bat, that was the end of your Army career. That's not the case, huh?
No. I hadn't even been diagnosed at this point. I still was, I didn't know I had it. You know, the breakdown hadn't happened. I was kind of like...
Wait a minute. I missed something here. There's a disconnect. You said that your Army doctor who diagnosed you said, I never want you to eat another MRE. So you sort of jumped ahead jumped back.
I went ahead about 5 or 6 months, I guess. This was, let me see. I came home from the second deployment December 8th of 04. And I went into Ranger School April 15th or 16th or 17th of 05.
Okay.
And I was diagnosed with the diabetes July of 05, July 22nd or 23rd of 05. And it was maybe August 1st or shortly thereafter that the Army doctor tells me, you're never going to eat another one of these MREs. And he didn't tell me why, you know. And I didn't ask. I just... You know, I'm in the military, I take orders. And he told me what to do, and he's my doctor, and I trust him. And so,
besides not eat those MREs, what were you supposed to do? Put you on medication right away? Well, insulin right away.
Yeah.
It's type 1.
Yeah, the day that I was diagnosed, immediately they put me on injections, and I spent 4 days in the hospital. This was mid to late July that happened. And I had been in Ranger School... went into Ranger School in April. Like I said, I came back from that deployment in December, went into Ranger School in April. Towards the middle of May, we were walking out, or I guess late April, we're walking out to do combat patrols in Ranger School, and there's a 16-mile road march that you got to pass to move on to this point in the training. If you're in the Army Ranger Regiment, you have got to graduate from Army Ranger School to get promoted to sergeant. And so that's what's on my plate right here, is I got to get through this to get promoted to sergeant and progress my career.
Yeah.
And at this point, I'm thinking, like, if I, you know, I'm going to get through this. There was no doubt in my mind. Because there's no choice. You have to do it. You don't go back to that unit without your Ranger tab and you're, you know, graduating. You don't go back to the Rangers, otherwise you got to hold your head in shame. And so there was no doubt in my mind I was going to do it. And anyway, we get on this road march, and on mile 7 of the road march, I got a level 3 ankle sprain, which is basically like all the ligaments on the outside of my left ankle were blown out to the point that it could not hold my ankle from being dislocated. My ankle would dislocate and pop back in and dislocate and pop back in. And I had to get through the school to get promoted to sergeant and progress my career. And so I walked the next 9 miles like that. And I would say every mile I must have dislocated my ankle 10 times. It was the most painful thing I've ever been through. And by the end of it, by mile 16, I'm like literally, you know, in tears, basically still walking with a 100-pound pack on. But I'm like, holding tears in. I mean, I dislocated my ankle 50 times in a row just now over the last like hour, 2 hour period, and it's terrible, you know. But I finished it.
Amazing.
And there was an instructor who decided he didn't like me because I was holding up the group, and I tried to tell him my ankle is broken, and he's like, no, it's not. You're just trying to get out of it. So he wouldn't let me quit. So I kept on walking in misery, and we made it to the end, and then I went to the medic station, and this instructor was like, I'm going to throw you out of the course. Your ankle better be broken.
Yeah.
Right? Well, the medic, who's a young guy like me, he takes my boot off, and he takes my foot in his hand, and he pops it out. He dislocates it to the left, and then he pushes it to the right to see if the ligament damage on the inside of the ankle, if there was any damage to the ligaments there, and there wasn't. But he easily popped it out and popped it back in.
Yeah.
And he looks at the sergeant, who's like ready to beat me up, you know, telling me that I'm weak or whatnot. And he tells him, you know, he's hurt, so leave him alone. And so at that point, the sergeant left me alone. But he kept his eye on me the rest of the time that I was. He had a dislike for me from that day forward.
Not even an apology.
Oh, there's no apologies in the in Ranger School or the Ranger Regiment. You just deal with it, you know.
God.
I mean, it made me. Looking back, I have fondness on all those experiences because it made me who I am now, and I'm 100 times stronger because of it. I can't say that everyone always agrees with me because I'm so opinionated, and I'm so, you know, I have my ideals and I'm sticking to them.
Well, we're going to get into that. here we are. I haven't told anybody what station they're listening to, and since the beginning of the program, it's AM, and because I'm riveted by this story. Justin Baker, our special guest here on the KSCO Saturday Special, we will be opening the phone lines here when we finish telling his story, and then we will get into his view of the world here. But if you want to start calling 479-1080 in area 831, that's the number to use. If you want to shoot an email, it's mz@ksco.com. We're going to take a commercial break and be right back. So stay with us. It's KSCO, your favorite radio station.
Hi, I'm R.J. Robertson, a lifetime resident of Santa Cruz and a longevity associate. Two-thirds of all Americans are either overweight or obese. Which group do you belong? Was weight loss one of your New Year's resolutions? How's that working out for you? If your answer's not so good, then I've got the solution for you. It's Youngevity's Slender FX Weight Management System. This is a system that is specifically designed to make it easy for you to drop the pounds. Look good at that upcoming reunion, wedding, or just going to the beach. So if you need to drop a few pounds or a lot of weight, order Youngevity's Slender FX Weight Management System. You'll find it so easy to lose weight, your friends will be asking you how you did it. Just go to kscoteam.com. That's kscoteam.com. And don't forget to ask about the business opportunities through Youngevity.
When you want straight talk, great service, and the best deals, you will always find them at North Bay Ford in Santa Cruz. Hello, I'm Jeff Winterholder. North Bay Ford is a locally owned dealership with low overhead, friendly, small town values, and the best deals on new and pre-owned cars, trucks, and RVs. Get this, Jeff's deal of the week at North Bay Ford.
The Build Ford Tough F-150 Super Crew 4-Wheel Drive XLT, Motor Trend's 2012 Truck of the Year. This full-size Ford truck can haul more freight and tow heavier trailers than any of its competitors. Why buy anything less, especially when you'll get $1,000 XLT retail bonus custom cash, $2,000 Ford credit retail bonus customer cash, and $500 retail trade-in assistance bonus customer cash, plus 0% financing? Details at northbayford.com.
We need a quality pre-owned economy car for your college student, a new family car for your Sunday drives, or a fleet of powerful new trucks for your berry ranches. Look first to your friends at locally owned North Bay Ford, 1999 Soquel Avenue, Santa Cruz, or on the web at northbayford.com.
It's out with the inside and in with the outside with some help from your friends and neighbors at Ace Hardware. Hello, Charlie Friedman here. You know, there's lots to do to keep the old home front looking good and feeling happy. Got to paint the fence, patch the driveway, fix the drip irrigation, and fertilize the fruit trees. And that's just for starters. Now, I could head across town to that giant box store and spend an hour wandering up and down the aisles, but I won't. Instead, I'll head over to my neighborhood Ace Hardware. They're in Watsonville, Freedom, Marina, Salinas, and Gilroy. These Ace Hardware stores are locally owned by my friends Manuel and Carlos Rodriguez, who are almost always on hand to make sure everything is working right. At My Neighborhood Ace, someone will meet me at the door and take me straight to the solution to my homeowner needs. That means I leave with the goods in a bag and a smile on my face. Now, when you find yourself in need of a paintbrush, or a screwdriver, or fertilizer, I suggest you head to your neighborhood Ace Hardware store in Watsonville, Freedom, Marina, Salinas, or Gilroy. Think of it as your ace in the hole.
You'll see us hiking in the hills of Boulder Creek,
walking the sands of Seabright,
or the orchards of Watsonville.
We're members.
We're employees.
We're the people of Bay Federal Credit Union.
We live in a special place.
Forests meet beaches.
People of all types blend together.
We celebrate our diversity.
To live in harmony.
That's why I bank.
I bank
at Bay Federal.
It's a credit union.
A not-for-profit.
A new way of banking.
It's local people helping local people.
Bay Federal has been making a real difference in our community for over 50 years.
The money saved here stays here.
The loans it creates stay here too.
So the artist in Davenport can open a gallery.
A family in SoCal can buy a home.
Or the farmer in Salinas can help feed the world.
Join us to make a real difference.
In your life.
In my life.
And the lives of everyone here.
Bay Federal Credit Union.
Making a real difference.
Learn more at bayfed.com.
If someone should ask, tell them you heard it on AM 1080, KSCO.
Welcome back to hour number one of the KSCO Saturday Special on your favorite radio station and mine, AM 1080, KSCO Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, Silicon Valley, and world via KSCO.com, streaming live on the Internet. MZ here with special guest Justin Baker. Who is an Army Ranger. Once you're an Army Ranger, you always get the title, even though you're not being an Army Ranger these days, because you developed a serious case of type 1 diabetes in the field, and probably as a result of, I said in the promo, you were exposed to chemicals or conditions. It doesn't sound like it was chemicals. It sounds like it was conditions, eating conditions, food, and so forth. All of a sudden you find yourself having to shoot up insulin, what is it, 7 times a day, something like that? 6 or 7?
3 to 4 times a day.
Oh, okay. Was it more at one point?
No, but my Army doctor had me checking my blood sugar 10 times a day, so I basically wore off all my fingerprints because I was pricking my finger so much. I had just pits in my fingers.
Wore off fingerprints?
Yeah. I mean, I had, my fingers were disgusting. It was terrible. And that's something that every diabetic's got to do, whether they're type 1 or type 2. They got to prick the finger and check the blood sugar.
Well, I still have fingerprints, but I guess I haven't pricked them enough. So anyhow, if you want to give us a call, 479-1080 is the phone number. But we're probably not going to take any calls until hour number two, after Kay's commentary and after the top of the hour news. But if you want to come in and get connected here before then, now would be a good time. Who knows what? Maybe we won't get all that many phone calls. If I were a betting man, I'd say we'd get a lot of them here. But I want to continue the story here. All right, so you all of a sudden you learn that you're diabetic, and it ain't type 2, it's type 1. It's the real deal. Your pancreas is pretty much shut down, or shut down enough so that you have to take injections. That must have been pretty devastating to you, or was it?
It was absolutely the most devastating thing I've ever experienced. The breakdown had been taking place. I had been sick. At this point, I knew that I was sick. And to top it all off, I'd been using duct tape to hold together a basically broken ankle for weeks at this point, just trying to struggle through this training so that I could get promoted to sergeant when I got back to my unit. And it was bad enough that one of the other Rangers, he was like, "You look terrible," and I hadn't even noticed that I had lost 31 pounds, and I only weigh, my natural body weight's 155, so I had literally, I went into the school weighing 170, and, you lose weight in that school, because it's all about sleep deprivation and starvation in Ranger School. They want to simulate combat stress, and they want to push your body to the max and see who wants to make it. And I lost 31 pounds, and I was down to, I think, 132 And I looked like I had just come from Auschwitz. The day that I went into the hospital and I finally really looked at myself in the mirror, I looked like a concentration camp victim. And the diabetes had pretty much ravaged me, you know.
The diagnosis had taken place or not yet?
The day of the diagnosis, I was convinced by one of my fellow Ranger students. He said, hey, you're urinating frequently, you look terrible, you have no energy, you're always tired. He said, I think you're diabetic. And so I couldn't even, every day we had to shave our face, you know, it's military standard. I couldn't even get through shaving my face without having to stop and taking a break. I mean, I was so fatigued. And so finally, I realized how miserable I was, and I went and I saw the medic. And the medic, I said, hey, one of my buddies down there thinks I'm a diabetic, and I'm feeling terrible. And he said, well, pee in this cup. And I peed in the cup, and he stuck a little test strip in the cup, and he pulled it out, and my body's pH was way off, which happens with diabetics who are going into ketoacidosis, which is a potentially fatal state to be in if you're anyone.
Yeah,
but diabetics face this on a regular basis.
Sure.
And immediately, as soon as he saw the test strip, he said, you're diabetic. He didn't even do... No blood test, no nothing. I mean, this guy...
Yeah, you were spilling, yeah.
He knew it. I want to touch on one thing real quick, because at this point, it seems like just conditions that caused my body to change to this extent. And what I left out was before each deployment, you go to the clinic and you get a barrage of vaccinations, okay? And my first deployment, I got 9 vaccinations at the same time. And basically the way that they do it is there's a row of medics on either side of you. You take your shirt off, mm-hmm. You walk down the row, and you get stuck with needles in both arms at the same time by different medics. They're just, oh, here's yellow fever, here's smallpox, here's anthrax, here's bam, 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 typhoid. And all the diseases I just listed or viruses I just listed, I got stuck with all of those plus more. I did two
probably
deployments.
Already had those, had some of those at some time in your life before, no?
Possibly. I'm not sure, but I never got 9 in one day.
Yeah, okay.
And then my second deployment, 2 days before I left, they gave me 6 more. And so I had 15 vaccinations in a 6-month or a 7-month period. After being diagnosed, I ran into a veteran who was healthier than me, also an insulin-dependent diabetic, 30 years old, same age as me. And I asked him, well, what happened, dude? How did you get this? And he says, well, I've been researching it because I didn't understand how I could get it either. And I found it. He said, I found a study in Norway where they claim that vaccinations, too many vaccines, can turn your immune system into like hyperdrive. And now your body's like fighting itself to fight off 8 or 10 or 12 vaccines, which are all deadly viruses. Your body's got to fight that, and now your immune system's overloaded. And he said, and what happened to you and what happened to me most likely is this caused our body to have an immune reaction, which I do have an immuno problem where my body's fighting off the insulin that my body is naturally producing. And that is an immune reaction from what this other veteran was telling me. Now, I haven't had a chance to look the study up yet, but I'm doing research on it, and I'm going to find it. Because I think that the vaccines may possibly...
So it might have been chemical related as well as food related.
There's obviously a handful of possibilities, you know.
Right. Oh, boy. We're talking with Justin Baker, our special guest on the Saturday special today. We got an hour ahead of us. We will open up the phone lines shortly after he tells us the nightmare that he has gone through since having been honorably discharged and being assured that he would be taken care of by our government that he served, and he'll tell us that story. You're listening to AM 1080 KSCO, Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, San Jose. We will be back in about 6 minutes right after we hear from CBS News.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Fires burning dozens of homes in Oklahoma. Firefighters facing tricky winds, triple-digit temperatures.
Not only the 110-degree heat, But the additional heat that comes with the fire is definitely there, and it causes a lot of physiological issues.
Oklahoma National Guard Colonel John Harrison, just now one of the wildfires there under control, but the long-range forecast suggests we will see more of this stuff this summer.
The western region is now facing its greatest risk of the season for wildfires, as hot weather patterns continue to dry out fuels and forests. Wildfire analyst Jeremy Sullen says there's no lack of sufficient fuel to burn.
We have last year's component of fuel still standing on the landscape, plus this year's growth, and now is fully cured out, leading to a pretty heavy and continuous fuel bed.
The forecast also calls for a greater likelihood of thunderstorms this month, and therefore the chance of lightning-caused fires. Stephen Kaufman, CBS News.
A little more than an hour from now, an era of Olympic swimming will come to an end, the Michael Phelps era. Here's CBS's Steve Futterman in London.
Michael Phelps has made it very clear this will be his last competitive race. After the race tonight, he will retire from competitive swimming. He will take part in the medley relay. He will be part of the U.S. team. He will swim the butterfly leg. That is his number one specialty. The U.S. given a very good chance to win. And if the U.S. does win, it will be Michael Phelps' 18th lifetime gold medal. Steve Futterman, CBS News, at the Summer Olympics in London.
Winning gold already today in London. Serena Williams and the Bryan brothers on the tennis court. The men's basketball team gets its first challenge of the tournament. They beat Lithuania, but not by much. This is what it sounds like in Aleppo. Syrian troops firing on rebel positions, war in the streets and overhead. From Dubai, reporter Tula Vlahu talking to residents of the shell-shocked city.
The resident said to me that today he was actually woken up by the sound of helicopters flying very close to his home, and not only flying close, but very low.
Early Monday morning, the Mars rover Curiosity scheduled to land on Mars. Not an easy task. NASA's Mars program director, Doug McQuiston.
This is the most challenging landing we've ever attempted, so we'll see how this goes.
It'll plunge into the Martian atmosphere at 12,000 miles per hour, parachuting in at about 1,000 miles an hour, and then use rockets to break most of the rest of the way. One person dead, two injured after a crash at the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota.
In my hindsight, something, you know, it looked like it was coming at me. I turned my head and I drive around a little bit, and it's just this huge crash.
Rental truck too tall for the opening, hitting an overhead concrete steel support beam. This is what it sounds like to jump out of an airplane and fall at 220 miles an hour with 137 of your closest friends. Shattering the vertical skydiving record, it happened in the skies over Ottawa, Illinois. This is CBS News.
Do you have dark circles under your eyes that make you look tired? Do you have bags or puffiness? Hi, I'm board-certified plastic surgeon Dr. Steven Greenberg. When patients ask me about dark circles or puffiness around their eyes, I tell them about a breakthrough cream called Lumitone. Now you're invited to try Lumitone for free. Lumitone was made to work in two ways. It instantly fades dark circles from view and relaxes the look of puffiness. The results are so dramatic. I've tried this in hundreds of my own patients, and they love it. Stop looking tired and start looking refreshed. If you have dark circles or puffiness under your eyes, call now.
Right now, listeners of this station are invited to try Lumitone free. Pay only a small shipping and handling fee. For details, call 1-800-469-0252. That's 800-469-0252. This free offer is available while supplies last. Call 1-800-469-0252. That's 800-469-0252.
4 minutes past the hour, you're listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Rick O'Shea with a King of the Hill traffic update. Well, there is a fire currently burning in northeast Boulder Creek. Fire began and phone calls were received to emergency dispatchers at about 8:20 this morning. The area is Deer Creek Road and Bronze Road. That area, fire crews are estimating that it's about 6 to 8 acres. Cal Fire is managing the fire. No evacuations are currently in place. Now, that can always change, but for now, no evacuations. The area is heavily timber and brush, but they don't expect this to get any larger than it is. It's very well taken care of, very well handled. And right now, again, 5 to 8 acres, northeast Boulder Creek, Deer Creek Road, and Ron's Place for a wildfire that started at about 8:20 this morning. It's 61 degrees outside KSCO studios. No traffic accidents to report. Everything is fine on Highway 117. Does slow down. There's an accident northbound just before Los Gatos Saratoga Road. Stall in the right lane. Southbound 17 traffic is slow off of 85. And we do anticipate slow traffic later on, especially around the beach areas. There's a lot of people coming to Santa Cruz for this sunny, what will be a sunny summer afternoon. Before we start hour two of the Saturday special, time for the latest K's commentary on KSCO.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is K's Whirling.
These are two random thoughts. One is Donald Trump's and one is mine, and I'll read mine first. Random thought number one. Isn't it true that sanctuary cities are U.S. cities which have national government approval to break the laws which our Congress passed for the betterment and sensible running of our country? But something's wrong with that interpretation of sanctuary cities. Truth be told, while our federal government makes laws so that our country can function logically, they turn around and give certain American cities permission to break those very laws passed by our Congress to run the country smoothly, or rather logically. So what is right? Can we break the national laws, or do we observe them? For your logical information, it appears that all the large important U.S. cities like New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Los Angeles, etc. I believe there are close to 100 sanctuary cities. They're all full of illegals who are breaking our laws legally. Is this a stupid joke? Why does our federal government condone and approve of the existence of sanctuary cities, which apparently exist to break our national laws? What kind of stupidity comes from our country who wants to have it both ways? And now for random thought number two. Donald Trump explains Obamacare. Let me get this straight. We are being gifted with a health care plan we are forced to purchase and find if we do not, which purportedly covers at least 10 million more people without adding a single new doctor, but provides for 60,000 new IRS agents, written by a committee whose chairman says he does not understand it, and it is passed by a Congress that did not even read it, but exempted themselves from it, and it is signed by a Dumbo president who smokes, with funding administered by a Treasury chief who did not pay his taxes, for which we will be taxed for 4 years before any benefits take effect, by a government which has already bankrupted Social Security and Medicare, all to be overseen by a Surgeon General who is obese and financed by a country that is broke. What in the world could possibly go wrong? For KSCO, this is Kay Swirling.
We've got a transmitter, and we're not afraid to use it.
News Talk 1080
okay,
KSCO.
Okay, well, here we are back in KSCO land here. we're about to start hour number two officially. Won't that be fun? Yes, sir. Okay, so stand by. Here is the hour two official jingle.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show. I'd love to visit, but you'll have to call back. KSCO has the inside track.
Okay, we never want to send people away from the radio station, but the story we're going to get into pretty quickly here is going to make you pretty mad, so fair warning if you'd rather not.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go.
KSCO Radio.
Okay, we're talking with Army Ranger Justin Baker here. We spent the last hour sort of building up to the main problem here. He has developed type 1 diabetes during, probably, not necessarily for sure, as a result of things that happened to him in the Army, like being overloaded with vaccinations and being fed high carbohydrate food that wasn't of particularly high quality. But there's no proof of any of that. But what there is proof of is that you became diabetic while in the service of the United States Army.
Yes.
Okay. And when you were diagnosed, you were told that your Army career was over, yes? Or not quite yet? How did that work?
I was kind of given the option between a desk job or going home. And I signed up to go overseas, and I signed up to be a part of a special ops team and a special ops unit. And the thought of sitting at a desk all day is not what I went in to do. I went in to defend my country. And so the idea of a desk job wasn't what I wanted. And my chain of command.
And that was the only option to remain in the service as a desk job. Yeah.
Basically, my chain of command set me down and said, look, you know, you can't be a ranger anymore. You have to be able to deploy. You have to be deployable to be in the Rangers, and we can't send you back onto the battlefield, because if you get out onto the battlefield with a platoon, and you have a blood sugar crash, and the medic has to stop and bring you back to life, all those guys are at risk of being ambushed while they're trying to rescue you. So, you know, we can't risk everybody else.
Sounds reasonable.
To put you out there.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's, you know, that's fair. I would never want to endanger anybody on my team, you know. So yeah, that was pretty much the choice I had.
That was an easy choice for you.
Yeah, my chain of command wanted to do the best they could for me. Unfortunately, they're all in the Army, so they've never dealt with the VA.
Okay.
And so they sat me down and they said, okay, according to your Army doctor, this is the disability rating you qualify for, and then we're gonna plan a budget for you, and you're gonna go to college, and you're gonna get the GI Bill, and this is how much you're gonna be making a month on disability and the GI Bill. You know, and you're going to go to school, and you're going to be a college graduate, and then you're going to get on with your life, and you're going to do big things. And so that was my plan, you know. And my team leaders all told me you're capable, and they felt that I was capable, and I felt that I was capable. And so I said, all right, I'll sign on the dotted line, and you can send me home.
Okay, and that's what happened.
Yep.
Then what happened?
It took a year for the medical board to make a decision on my case. My Army doctor that I had been working with...
What do you mean, make a decision on your case? As far as providing you insulin that you needed to survive?
Oh, no. Huh? No. Actually, okay, here's another problem that I'm having with the VA here. The Army gave me absolutely everything I needed when I told them that I needed it. I had the best care. They told me if your blood sugar gets up to 300, you bring yourself into the hospital and we'll fix you up right away. And that has not been the case with the VA. And my whole chain of command, you know, sat me down and said, they're going to take great care of you, dude. Don't worry about it. You know, you're going to have everything that you need. And I believe, I trusted those men with my life. And so I believed what they told me. And they told me what they believed to be true, which is that the VA takes good care of the soldiers when we get home. You know, and...
That's what I've always heard.
There's a problem with the administration end of the house there. There's a problem with the bureaucracy there. And what the people need to know, and the reason that I'm here today, is not to whine and moan about my situation. It's to tell you, I know soldiers that have been blown up. I know soldiers that have been shot in the face or in the head. And luckily enough, they're still alive. And I've heard their stories. I go to Cabrillo College, and there's a Marine there named Ben, who was shot right between the eyes. And I'm telling his story right now because they keep on putting him off. They keep on pushing him off. Instead of giving him his disability, the guy took a bullet for his country in the head. I mean, take care of him. they keep on, we'll bump his disability rating up 10% a year, and eventually he'll get what he's entitled to. No. Take care of him now. Take care of him from day one. Ben has survived this. Ben is in college. Ben is trying to better himself. He will be an asset to our society, but he's going to go crazy, and he's going to, you know, he's going to go postal if you don't take care of him. I mean, who wouldn't? You know, you've sacrificed your life, practically. I mean, he damn near sacrificed his life. And he deserves it. He deserves to be taken care of. And he doesn't deserve to be put off and have to reapply for another 10% disability rating bump next year when he should have had 80 or 90 or 100 5 years ago when he first got sent home. You know, I had another Marine in my Spanish class last semester who was an explosive ordnance disposal guy. He was on the bomb squad, okay? He was leaning over an improvised explosive device in Iraq, and it went off. And luckily, he had the bomb suit on, and whoever built the bomb didn't build the best quality bomb. And so he didn't get blown to smithereens, but he got thrown 30 feet into the Humvee that was parked behind him. And basically his butt went up against the grill, and he was laid out over the hood. So he was smashed up against the Humvee. And he's got some, you know, bone and joint problems now because of the impact. And he tore the ligaments in his shoulder. And he told me recently, he said, you know, it took them 9 years to diagnose the fact that I had torn my, what is it, the ACL or the, whatever the ligament in the shoulder. He said, for 9 years, I would go in and I would tell them, I tore my shoulder. And for 9 years, they said, no, you didn't, no, you didn't, no, you didn't. And just
this
recently.
This is the VA?
Yes.
Okay.
For just recently, they finally, oh, did you know that your shoulder's torn?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, I've been telling you that all along. You know, if you guys would just listen when we speak, you would have diagnosed this issue a long time ago, but instead I had to self-diagnose, and then I had to wait for almost a decade for you to admit it, you know. And these are the problems that we face here. I mean, I'm just one man, but there are a lot of guys who are a lot worse off than me that need all of our help.
All right, tell me what happened to you. Okay, you were treated well by the Army, but the Army and the VA are two different entities that obviously don't communicate very well between each other.
Well, they, for financial reasons, the VA has told me many times, well, the Army promised you that, not the VA. And so we don't have to follow through with those promises because we are not the Army. It sucks for you. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Like, they're like, look, we're two totally separate entities, buddy. So they're handling it from a business perspective. You know, there's a sister,
God, it's unbelievable,
sister company called the VA, and
they're,
they don't
want to
pay the Army's
bills.
They're
both the government.
Our tax dollars fund that, and they can't seem to fund disabled veterans is the problem.
Oy. All right, time to open wide open the phone lines. 479-1080, that's in area 831. The email address is mz@ksco.com. We want you to call and call in and talk to Justin Baker. It's my understanding that when we started running the promo, shortly afterwards, you got a call from Sam Farr's office. Is that true?
Yeah, I've spoken with the office several times. We haven't resolved anything yet, but I'm on the radar, I guess you could say, because of you. So I would like to thank you for that.
Oh, well, hey, it's our job, man. What can I say? There's no way in the world we could thank you enough for what you did. All righty. So let's go to our first caller. That would be Dave in Capitola. Dave, welcome to the Saturday special with Justin and MZ.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I appreciate your time for taking my call. I wanted to drop a little bit of information, a lifeline. Baker happens to be one of my good buddies, and a couple of years ago, he and I went up to an office in Oakland that acts as a middle person between the veteran and the VA. It's the DAV, is the Disabled American Veterans.
Why should that be necessary? But I'm sorry, I can't contain myself.
it's been very helpful for me personally because as the middle person between the service member and the Veterans Administration, they make sure that the veterans get everything that they're entitled to. not just for medical, primarily the medical disabilities, but anything that the VA can do for the service member, the DAV makes sure that they do it properly, 100%. So I think that's one big difference that with my experiences as a veteran and Justin's experiences is that he initially took the burden on his shoulders, knowing what he knew from what his chain of command told him and from what his experiences were, whereas I was able to go to this organization that knows the ins and outs, and where one organization is in the habit of saying no, these guys are in the habit and the routine of saying yes for the vets.
Yeah.
Dave, would you say that the reason the DAV is so proactive is because the guys that are sitting in there speaking with us when we go into that office to talk to them are all veterans themselves?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Those are our brothers and sisters that have gone through what we've gone through. You know, they know the ins and outs because they have been in the same shoes that we're in right now. So I highly recommend that's what I really recommend.
Did you guys know each other from combat, or did you meet here in
I grew up with Justin. I mean, he's been one of my family friends since eighth grade. We played soccer together. He convinced me to join the wrestling team. He convinced me to join the military. His dad was my soccer coach for years and years. I mean, we're good family friends.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Dave.
Yeah.
And thank you for your service. And, wow. Thanks for the positive call here. We'd like to have a lot more of those. 479-1080 in area 831. Thanks again for your call. Next call is going to be John in Carmel. John, welcome to the Saturday special with Justin and MZ.
Hey, Justin, MZ. Justin, my hat's off to you. I, too, am a veteran in Vietnam, and you're going to have a long road to toe working with the VA. It isn't the VA medical as much as the paperwork and the bureaucracy they do. I was in Agent Orange, and I've had many things happen. My immune system's broken down. I've had problems with cancer, and I've just had a problem with GBS, Guillain-Barre syndrome, which is the whole immune system breaks down and attacks the nervous system. Made me a quadriplegic. I'm coming out of that now. I'm being able to walk now, but they won't help you until you get into the medical system. Once you get into the medical system, they're outstanding, but that's a long ways to go.
I don't understand, John. Why wouldn't someone be in the medical system, quote unquote, right away?
Well, it's because the bureaucracy, and they don't want you to get into it. They're hoping you're going to die or go away. That's the basic bottom line. I've been fighting over the PTSD. I lost a marriage out of it and a bunch of other stuff. And, you know, they've assessed me with it. And, again, they won't give it to me yet. And I've been messing with
that. Wait a minute. We're talking 40 years.
Well, no, 30 I've been years. Messing with it 40 what? Years. I've been messing with it for about 7 years. And that's the normal
So this is sort of a deferred onset.
They're going to stall. They're going to stall. I've got about 12 inches of paperwork. They send you these huge, I don't know where Justin's got it yet, but they send you these huge things that you have to read, and they're very difficult to find out. Luckily, I've had a person that's been helping me with the paperwork, and I'm a pretty smart, college-educated guy, but they're so complex. And then if you screw it up, they get it back. It takes them 3 weeks to send it back to you, and then they're going to stall as much time as they can if possible. But, again, the medical part, like I use the four-door, they're outstanding. But it's to get into the medical part that's the hard part, and then the hard part is to get through their bureaucracy, not the medical part, but the VA's part out of Oakland. They're really totally intentionally incompetent.
Help me understand. You said that you're a Vietnam vet.
Yeah, that was the war that didn't happen.
Yeah,
the police action.
Yeah. Was it a war from your perspective?
Pardon?
It was a war from your perspective, though. Am I right?
Legally they said it was a police action. We weren't at war because it wasn't declared.
No, but I don't understand why the 7 year business is. I mean, because the Vietnam War was a long time ago, and
as I said, my paperwork.
I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
My paperwork has taken that long for them to do, and they haven't come up with a conclusion yet. And you try to call them, and you can't talk to them because all their mailboxes, voicemail boxes, are full. You send them letters. It takes months for them to respond. They just don't, you know. So the way I look at it is I'm getting medical care. They've done really nice on the cancer that I've had. They gave me treatment. I'm cancer-free right now. But I was involved in a lot of Agent Orange. It's what they call I-Corps, up towards the border. We flew in that stuff because we had to. And, again, it takes the immune system and rips it down. And as I said, I'm getting over GBS. I came down with January 11th with it, which made me a quadriplegic. And look that up. It's an interesting, it's not even a disease, but a lot of guys that were in Agent Orange, an odd high number of them came down with this GBS.
But you're coming out of it now, you say, yes?
Yep, I'm walking. Yep. They said I wouldn't walk for a year, and I'm walking.
Thank you, John. That's great.
Yep, you bet. There you go. Google that. That's 1 out of 100,000 get it, and there's a high amount of people that were in Agent Orange that are getting it. The other high amount was when they gave the swine flu shot. About 30% of the people 10 years ago or 15 years ago were getting GBS out of it. But you cannot talk to the people up there. They're swamped with paperwork trying to get into the VA system, whether it be medical or whether it disability. And it's impossible to deal with it. I went through 3 private shrinks on the outside, and I know that they're told, you know, don't give this guy this. They don't want you to do it. They don't want to help you with the benefit. And they make a very big effort not to do that, and they're hoping you'll die off.
Wow. Okay, John.
And I thank my brother who served. He did a great job, and I worked with Special Forces, hardcore guys, tough guys. My hat's off to you, and I'll be listening on the radio.
Talk to you guys later. And we thank you, too.
Thanks, John.
I think there should be a lot more callers than there are. Our next caller is going to be Craig in Capitola, but the board is wide open at 479-1080 in Area 831. I'm expecting other emails. There's one from Helga Hears that came through KSCO.com that I'll read in just a little bit. We'd like to hear from people with their VA and similar stories. We want to hear from veterans, please. 479-1080, that's in Area 831. It's your favorite radio station. AM 1080 KSCO, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, Silicon Valley, and the world via KSCO.com. Next caller, as promised, Craig in Capitola. Craig, welcome to KSCO with Justin and MZ.
Yeah, hey, Justin, God bless you for your service. I teach at Cabrillo. I teach a law enforcement class. And my best students are the vets that come in. They're there. They're stracked. They've got their haircuts. They're there exactly at 8 o'clock in the morning. I have no problem with them. They follow up. And I think the military service was great for those people. And I applaud the fact that you're on this radio station talking about the difficulties of veterans. I've had long talks with veterans. I've been in law enforcement for 25 years, and a lot of them come this way. And I just want to let you know that, you know, if you're capable of passing physical agility, anybody, any vet over there, you come down over to Free College to our law enforcement classes and fire classes, and you'll be treated extra special because of what you've done. And I just wanted to say, God bless you guys.
Thank you.
Take care. Thanks for calling in, Craig. 479-1080 in Area 831 is the number to call. We want to hear from you. Our good friend Richard N. Watsonville. I was going to say, where is Richard when we need him? And I didn't even have to say it. Here he is.
Hey, thank you, Michael. Thanks for having this guest on. But I kind of agree with some of what he's saying and some of what some of the other callers have said, because, like, the VA, to me, means violence anonymous. You get violent, they'll make you anonymous real quick. And that last, not the last call, the call before John from Carmel with the GPS, I had that in the 70s, Guillain-Barre syndrome. And, yeah, you can't walk. You're a quadriplegic. And yeah, we're all still fighting our claims 40 years later, Michael, for Vietnam War and wars.
You know, I don't know why, Richard, I've known you for...
You know why, Michael? Because they have, like, the disabled American veterans. For you, you'd go to the Jewish veterans of America. Eh?
If it applied, yeah, which it doesn't.
They have it, though. They have...
they have advocacy groups, is what you're saying.
And all these advocacy groups, like the Disabled American Veterans, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, and on, all they're concerned about is going to conventions, man. I mean, we only got one military, we only got one country, we only got one Veterans Administration. We only need one outlet to file our claims, I think. We don't need all these little do-gooders, Donna Jacobs included. She's brought on some phony stuff on this broadcast.
But what?
On this station, she brought on a couple of one guy. One time, I don't even want to talk about it. It was such a mess. But the thing is, with this young man, I have one thing to say to him: burn pits, man.
Burn pits.
Did you ever see a burn pit?
Oh man, I burned a ton of classified. Every piece of paperwork that once we were done with it had to be burned, and I had to stand over it and stir it with a stick because you can read.
What are you guys talking about? You're talking in code.
I'm talking about driving by the big ones. You know, where they burn all the chemical waste and all that other stuff.
No. We actually had the Afghanis do that. So that was one of those wonderful things that America does to civilians of the other countries. There was actually one 50 or 100 meters behind our little Kamo Tactical Operations Center, where I did my second deployment. There was one 100 meters back there.
The fact that you were close by or in an area or downwind or upwind, doesn't matter. That is a point that has been going on with this Afghanistan and Iraq thing that I really just do not understand. Instead of bringing it back home and recycling it, reusing it, we're going to leave it there and burn it, Michael. And these guys are ingesting and breathing in all this chemical stuff that's coming out of these huge bird pits. They're massive. I've been staying on top of this thing for years. But the thing is, the VA's not going to do anything for you guys as long as you're getting better. If you get better, your initial rating goes down. It does not go up. It only goes up when you get worse. So...
Richard, I've always thought that your experiences with the VA have been nothing but positive. Is that incorrect?
Oh no. Let me tell you something, Michael. They have a thing called a patient advocate. Okay, those are people that are supposed to advocate for the patients, right?
Okay.
They work for the VA. They're nurses and doctors. They're federal employees, so they're not going to advocate for the patient. When I was, has your guest been to Menlo Park yet?
No. No, I haven't been up there.
You keep it up. That's your next stop, man.
Is that the mental health unit?
That's the mental hospital for all the loonies up there with the PTSD and everything else going on. But the thing is, they came out with the Veterans Patients Bill of Rights. When I was locked up in there, and I said, well, nobody ever asked me about my opinion on this. This is your Bill of Rights, they said. We made it up. And the same thing is going on now with these patient advocates. They're all federal employees. So they're not going to rat out on themselves. They're not going to help you or do anything. So, no, I haven't. I've had good service from the VA, Mike, but I haven't had a good experience with the VA. And I've been at it ever since the day I got out. And all I can suggest to your guest there is that he does the same thing. And don't give up, because you will get to several points in your life where you're thinking, I just got to live in order to make this thing happen.
Yeah.
Because their job is to disclaim everything and show you that they're not liable for anything. And if anything, you'll come out thinking that it runs to your family.
Yeah, and I had no signs of it before I let them start putting all those needles and vaccines and...
No, they took into the military a perfectly good human being, or they would have done like they did Mrs. Whirling there and said, no, we'll pass.
Yeah.
We'll put you in the next round if we need you.
Yeah, they only want the best and the brightest to
That's because they got rid of this stupid draft, and you guys go in there and volunteer to kill people, and they want to know how crazy you really are. And they will push every button that they can. to get you to do what they want you to do, and then when they're done with you, that's it, man. You're gone. Don't become damaged goods. You should have been in the Army there, going through what's called the physical evaluation board, and not going home so that they can decide while you're at home your medical condition. See? That's what they do with me. They send me home for a 30-day convalescent leave, and then all of a sudden I had my discharge papers. So I don't know, but all I can say is stay at it, and I would get a hold of a guy named James Bogan. I don't know if you know James or not, but he's with the Disabled American Veterans, and that's one guy that I trust.
Richard, get an email to me, okay, to pass along, okay? Because we don't have anything to write with in the damn studio. So happy you called.
He was Veteran of the Year this year.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for calling, okay?
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Here's Zoltan in Santa Cruz. Zoltan, welcome to the KSCO special with Justin and MZ.
Yeah, hi, MZ, and thank you for, you know, bringing this problem up, and thank you, Justin, for your service for the country, okay?
Thank you.
I just came back from Hawaii, a friend of mine's son, and you know, he just came back from Afghanistan, too. Now, he lost a couple of his body, and, due to some explosion, and he was, you know, thrown up also, so he's got some all kinds of spinal problems. So the information what you are giving me over, giving us over the air, I'm really going to pass it on to him, because all these vaccinations...
Speak a little louder if you can into the phone, Zoltan, please.
Yeah, because all these vaccinations, I'm still in my jacuzzi.
Oh.
That's okay. Okay, you hear better?
Yeah.
Yeah, because all these vaccinations really affect your immune system, and actually, you know, creates a condition of a diabetic problem. Myself, I'm a, you know, pancreatic cancer survivor. I'm also diabetic, you know, type 2. But anyway, what I was really listening is that it's really, really despicable the way the Army or the VA is treating you, and that is looks like the precursor of the Obama healthcare. So this is what hope we're never going to have to deal with it, because just all these things.
What a thought, but I think you're right on, Zoltan.
Yeah, because all this garbage, but you have to go through, and all these intermediate people just you know, kind of trip you off. And in the meantime, you know, Obama wants to have, you know, 10, 15 million of them illegals on the system without adding a single doctor to it. But it was also, you know,
and a bunch of new IRS agents to punish those who don't sign into this stinking system that's going to be.
That's exactly right. That's what Kay said, and it beautifully said, you know. So right now we have like 250,000 new people, you know, sign up for disability, because they don't want to, you know, put these people politically on the unemployment list. In the meantime, you're fighting for a country, and you can't get a proper medical treatment. That just sucks, you know. It's really, you know, it brings up the blood pressure, you know.
Get out of the jacuzzi, and maybe your blood pressure will go down.
I'm okay. Just hearing the story.
I know. I warn people about this ahead of time.
No, well, this is very, very, you know, good information. You have to hear the best, you know, the good part of it. And actually, you know, just you have to, you know, hear both sides of the story. And unfortunately, you know, the Pentagon is loaded with all these lawyers, you know, writing up all these stupid codes. Like for my, you know, Hawaiian buddies, he said, well, no, we were trained to, injure people, not to kill. And somebody was shooting at us, and the guy actually killed this Afghan person. Now he's being court-martialed because all these damn lawyers here are just giving up, writing up all these stupid rules and regulations and conduct, and you just cannot follow it, you know? This is like, you know, willfully trying to destroy our soldiers, the soldiers' moral, and so on, you know?
Can I say something real quick on the soldier that you were telling us about when you first called in? You need to, and everybody out there who has a son or brother or sister or whatever in the military, they need to keep a copy of every piece of medical paperwork. I learned this the hard way. I didn't know that I was going to need all this stuff. You need to keep that vaccination record, because down the road, when we prove that all these vaccines are harming us more than they're helping us. You have to, the soldiers got to be able to prove that the military put it in them. And you need a copy of, they need a copy of every piece of medical documentation from the first day they go in the military, whether it's a, you know, a ingrown toenail or a broken ankle or a bullet hole. You need every piece of paperwork. You're going to need it to get your disability rating when you're out here. And if you don't have it, it's going to take you an extra year to get it, which gives them an extra year that they don't have to take care of you. So tell any of the soldiers, you know, keep copies of everything.
And just in another thing, what was shocking to me is that they were not really giving you a yearly medical, just the basic things, blood test. Okay, what's your sugar level? And all the heavy-duty training you went through, the physical exercise, you know, you shouldn't have been actually diabetic. And really, what you were saying is that this study from Norway probably relates to the condition breaking the immune system down in the system.
Mm-hmm. That's what the gentleman who told me about it, that's exactly what he said. He said it puts your immune system into hyperdrive mode where it's fighting off all the vaccines that were just injected, which are a deadly, all of them are a deadly virus. And so you put six deadly viruses in your body in one day. I mean, in the natural world, a human being is not going to come in contact with six deadly viruses at the same time. They might come in contact with one or two in a lifetime. But the body can fight that. But the body cannot fight six or nine or 12 at once. And that's what they're doing to us, you know?
Yeah, and also, unfortunately, you're kind of guinea pig, you know, where you cannot refuse the vaccination. This is what they're trying to do also to the civilian population through the FEMA camps, is vaccinate people, you know?
Yeah.
So this is almost like, you know, mass murdering people, you know, in a slow motion. And this is another reason why the medical, you know, manufacturers of these vaccines actually, they're immune from any lawsuits.
Oh,
so
my God,
you cannot
that too.
Sue them.
Jeez.
Okay, and this is another reason why you have so many autistic kids, because, vaccine after vaccine, so the body can only tolerate so much things that instead of using your own, you know, natural, immune system, actually it's breaking down the immunity, you know, immune system in your own body to fight any of these diseases.
Yep. Zoltan, thanks for a great call. Really appreciate it.
Well, okay, hey, Michael, you know, wonderful job. I know. Wish you all the best, Justin. Okay. Oh, just one more thing is okay.
Sure.
When you notice your diabetic condition, you know, coming up, okay, it's 400. That's you know, it's almost coming to fatal. Okay. So just be careful, monitor it, because, you know, you can destroy your liver and destroy your kidney. I knew somebody who just passed away because of this. And another thing is that when you were with a high elevation, this is when your body goes through an extra stress. That's when I found out my diabetic condition the first time. This is almost like a stress test when you go through the heart, you know, condition or checkup, whatever it is, okay? So on a high level, your body actually, you know, it gets through a stress to check your immune system, you know, for the diabetic condition. So that's a good indication for anybody who thinks that, you know, hey, all of a sudden high level, you know, that's in top of Lake Tahoe, you have to go in PPP. You know, okay, that's a condition. Hey, you have a diabetic condition.
Okay, yep. Zoltan, thanks again. That was Zoltan in Santa Cruz. Here's a an email from Daryl Hardy, government, a short email here, then we're going to go back to the phone and take Ben and Salinas and Gordy in Boulder Creek. By the way, 479-1080 in area 831-479-1080. We invite calls here because we will have time for some more calls before the end of the program. Daryl Hardy says, government-controlled health care, in the subject line of the email. These young men are a stark example of what health care will be like under government control. Mega kudos and gratitude to all those who serve our country, and shame in big letters on the system for the way they treat these people. We shall see if Mr. Farr will take this on for all mistreated vets. Thank you very much, Daryl Hardy, for that email to mz at ks KSCO.com. Next caller, Ben in Salinas. Ben, welcome to KSCO with Justin and MZ.
This is the great Ben, and thank you, MZ, for having this young man, this hero. Now, people wonder why I'm such probably the angriest caller that you have on KSCO.
You are pretty much the angriest caller. That's
okay,
exactly
and
right.
And the reason is for the way we've treated these heroes that put their ass on the line for us. Look, we know that Pat Tillman was killed by friendly fire. I've been fighting for these veterans, and I'm no pro in this field, but I've been fighting for these guys because I see the way our country sends them up there to possibly give their life for us and then craps on when they come back.
Yeah.
And the other caller that said, yeah, they wait for these guys to die to get them out of the line. I got some veterans I've been fighting for 5 years. You know what they ultimately offered this hero? $10 in food stamps. Now, if that doesn't make you use profanity at every corner, and yet, and to bring it to today's news, they're using drones on us. $20 billion for these drones that they're going to use on us, along with the stormtroopers that they're already by Homeland, the Homeland Gestapo there has already ordered up the stormtrooper uniforms to use them on us for daring to utilize our constitutional rights. And to this young man, I'm sorry for what these criminal VA, because they do wait for them to die. And you know what? If we can't take care of our veterans, we almost don't deserve our freedoms. They're fighting for us.
Almost.
Why can't we take care of this young man?
You can pull out the word almost, Ben.
Well,
if we don't take care of them, we don't deserve our freedom.
Well, I'm very angry because, and the blame falls on both sides of the line. There's too many of these government employees and the VA and the War Department and the kill. They're too comfortable with getting their regular checks. Well, I just donated my musical talent to play for this Vietnam stand down they had here at the Rodeo Grounds of Salinas, and I don't have to tell you how many times big old tough Ben in Salinas. I was brought to tears shaking these guys' hands and just being a small part of the tribute which this country owes them. When are we going to give these guys the respect and the desert and the money and the financial compensation they deserve? If we can afford the killing drones and the killing drones and the killing drones, we got to take care of these guys, Michael. We got to take care. There's no way to not take care of these guys. And I'm getting too emotional.
I could not agree with you more.
And I thank, and I once again, I thank this young man, and it brings me to tears. I've been fighting for years for these guys because the way we crap on them after they give their youth and their health as honorable young men to our country, and look what we do to them. Look what we did to Pat Tillman, and they can't tell us. What a bunch of crap. That's why, and I will stay mad until these guys get justice. Give them their care. Give them their benefits. Buy them, give them some of these foreclosed homes that the banks are stealing from. Give them homes. Give them the care. What is America about if it's not about pride in being an American? And I've said enough. Thank you.
Amen, Ben. Thank you for calling.
Can I comment on that real quick?
Sure,
Izzy?
Please.
Ben. My mom actually works at the Veteran Transition Center that put the stand down on, and they are doing great things for homeless veterans, and I just want to give them a shout out on the air. If any homeless vets out there in Santa Cruz or Monterey County are listening, if you need a place to stay, go to the Veterans Transition Center on Imgen Road at Fort Ord, and they will help you out. They're helping a ton of people out there. And also, the day that Pat Tillman was killed, I was actually the radio operator in the Tactical Operations Center in the Army Ranger Tactical Operations Center. And I listened to that whole firefight happen. And, what a dramatic event that was, when Pat Tillman got killed. Basically everyone walked around, all the Rangers were walking around in shock for days after that. We couldn't believe it. And technically speaking, we weren't even in Afghanistan. We were there, but we weren't there until the only celebrity in the bunch got his head blown off. I mean, and the world media was following our platoons around out in the field within 12 hours of him being killed. We had, Time Magazine people following around our platoons asking us, are you guys Army Rangers? Are you guys Army Rangers? Tillman. Now there's a hero. right there. Oh, he yeah. walked away from a $3.2 million contract in the NFL, all a Pro Bowl player, and both of his grandfathers served in World War II. And, you know, he walked away from the American dream to go serve his country.
Wow. Okay, yeah. He's a great hero, as are you and as are all people who serve this country. It's the KSCO Saturday special. We got about 10 minutes left. We have to take a commercial break. I'm going to read this, and we have a couple of other callers here. Special guest, Justin Baker, who has served his country, you and me, and done a wonderful job here. And he has a plight that really needs to he has a message here that we want to do our best to help get out. Here's an email from Helga that I spoke of earlier. A very dear friend I lost 12 years ago. He was 58 years old. At the time of his death had diabetes 1 and was on 32 pills a day. They told him that he was final and would not receive any more drugs. It's this short, I don't know the word, S-H-O-Y-S, drugs, and please get this, no water and food. He lingered for 10 days after no more water, etc. I told them you treat a dog better than a human. The conditions at Palo Alto are unbelievably bad, and I even told Mr. Leon Panetta in person about that here in Carmel. Thank you, Helga, for your call. Gordy will be up next, then Scott, Kurt in Scotts Valley, but now we're going to take a commercial break. Please stay with us. It's the Saturday special on your favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO.
We always knew Dr. Guy Peabody to be an excellent dentist, and so we're not surprised when, once again, Dr. Peabody was voted best dentist in Santa Cruz County in the Good Times Reader's Poll. But you do not need a Reader's Poll to know how good Dr. Peabody is. Just ask his patients.
Hi, I'm Robert. I have found Dr. Peabody to be a wonderful dentist, and I would most highly recommend him to anyone.
My name's Ramona. My dentistry has never been better. I have beautiful teeth now. It was a very comfortable, delightful experience, and I would recommend him to anyone.
My name is Terry. I am terrified of going to the dentist, and they told me about the Guy Peabody, sedated dentistry. They're really great people.
Visit drpeabody.com, that's drpeabody.com, or better yet, give Dr. Peabody's office a call at 457-0343 and be warmly welcomed and assisted in scheduling your appointment. That's 457-0343. You will be happy you called Santa Cruz's choice for best dentist.
My name is Mickey Phelps, and I'm the executive chef at Crown Cafe Deli and Catering. For summertime, I have a summer fresh salad, which is arugula. You get some nice blue cheese in there, tomatoes with a light balsamic vinaigrette. We've got a southwestern salad, which is actually geared towards more of the Hispanic side. It's got corn in it. Very refreshing, very ingredients, summer ingredients, shall we say. Then we have the traditional, the Caesar, the Cobb, the Chef. And of course, another popular salad is the Chinese chicken salad, which is done fresh every day. Fans, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. Without you, we wouldn't be who we are. Mickey Phelps really likes to thank you. If you need to reach Crown Cafe and Catering, you can reach me on area code 831-566-1425. Crown Cafe Deli and Catering is located at 3555 Suite G, Clare Street in Capitola, between Trader Joe's and Bed Bath & Beyond in the Brown Ranch Marketplace. So come see us.
When you need electrical work and you need it done right, on time, and for a great price, call on a woman. Leone Electric has been building, repairing, and remodeling electrical needs for residential, light commercial, and industrial customers for more than 20 years. Hello, I'm Chris Leone, the proprietor of Leone Electric, and I'm here to take care of your electrical needs. Please listen.
My name's Laurel DeGrassi, and I live in Scotts Valley. I really like Chris as a person. She's kind. She's easygoing. She was creative with me, and she really respected my economic desires. And yet, with all that, she was professional and an expert in her field. It was really a joy working with her. That's the most important part.
When you need electrical work and you need it done right, on time, and for a great price, call on a woman. Call Leone Electric. That's L-E-O-N-E Electric at 831-234-5120. That's 234-5120. 5120.
People are talking on AM 1080 KSCO.
Welcome back to the home stretch of the KSCO Saturday Special, MZ, with very special guest, Justin Baker. Justin is 30 years old. He is half my age, but twice my height. He's 10 feet tall, in my eyes. And he's a Army Ranger who has not been treated very nicely. And we do have a couple of other callers, Gordy and Kurt. But in the final 5 minutes, I want to make sure that you say something that Kay came in to remind you has not been said. That's a key thing here. So go ahead, Justin, and I know you might be a little uncomfortable. But
all right, the reason that MZ brought me on the radio today is because I told him about some of the shortcomings that I have run into with the VA system. And as some of the previous callers said, I have no complaints against the doctors and nurses that run the hospital or my primary care physician at the Monterey Clinic. They're doing the best that they can with what they have to work with, and so I commend them on that. Although a few times I told them about the fact that the pharmacy does not send me my prescription refills, which I cannot live without, they don't send them to me when I need them. And I'll call them and I'll tell them, and they say, well, you got to give us 2 weeks notice because we ship it from across the country. And so even when I call them and I give them the 2 weeks notice on several occasions, the stuff just does not show up. And it's not until I go in and get back out of the hospital and call and say, hey, where is my insulin, that they say, oh, well, whoever you talked to forgot to put it into the system. So it never got ordered. And that's happened to me twice. And one hospital stay was $36,000. Okay, and I try and pay my bills on time, and I have a decent credit score that would be good enough to buy a house if it weren't for my bad debt-to-income ratio due to medical bills that the VA is supposed to pay for me for the rest of my life because they're due to my service-connected disability. And that is the contract that I have with them, and that is what they have not done for me, and it's hurting me financially. And, you know, I'm not here just for me today. I'm here to explain some of these issues because I guarantee you that there are many other veterans that are also facing.
We got an email from, someone named, NavalCook5@gmail.com. MZ, please let the gentleman on with you know that the widest diagnosed problem with all veterans is diabetes! ! I personally feel it is either the chemicals that they were exposed to, or the vaccinations. Thank you very much, NavalCook5. Back to the phone lines we go now. Gordy in Boulder Creek, you're on KSCO with Justin and MZ.
Good morning, Justin and MZ.
Hi.
I've had to deal with a number of issues with the VA, and again, I'll express my gratitude for the doctors and the nurses, especially there at the VA. They are above professional in their performance and our care. The problems that I've had with the VA have all been administrative. I've gone through this patient advocate process, and at the end of it, I'm reminded that when all else fails, write your congressman. I'm currently in the process of putting together some paperwork and sending copies of these paperwork to my Congress critter, which happens to be Anna Eshoo. That is the only way we're going to get any effective change in the implementation of the VA. Now, again, we had a contract with our government, and our government is not upholding its end of that contract.
Gordy, thank you very much for your call. Love to have you on more. We've got to take Kurt in Scotts Valley. Kurt, you're on the air. You're the last caller today.
Okay, thank you, Michael. Hey, I just want to say I'm just as mad as Ben, the great Ben, and I think it's outrageous that our country lets this happen, and it really outrages me that we bailed out Wall Street and these fat-ass Congress people, and I think they should take all the money from the banks and the Congress people and give it to the true heroes, which are the people that serve in the field. And just hearing this stuff, I just don't even feel like I want to be an American citizen, knowing how bad our country is to our to the people who really lay their blood down. It outrages me. So thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Boy. Well, we can, let's see. We have one more. We might be, thank you for your call here, Kurt. Real quick, 20 seconds, Joe, quick.
Yeah, if you want to be treated right, don't go into the service. And then if you go into the service, don't go into the Army. Go into the Air Force. Get a career that is marketable afterwards. What do you expect? It's a freaking service.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's why I did satellite communications instead of infantry.
Okay, that's it. Justin, you're going to be great. Thanks for showing up today, and thank you very much for your service. That's it, folks. See you next week.
That's all, folks.
KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas Monterey, San Jose. It is 12 noon.
End of an era here. Michael Phelps' last stance, his farewell, his goodbye. Phelps is about to compete in his final race as a competitive swimmer. He will swim the butterfly portion of the medley relay as part of the U.S. team. The Americans are favored. If the U.S. finishes first, Phelps' career will end with him earning Olympic gold medal number 18, a record that may never be broken. I'm Steve Futterman at the Olympic Aquatic Center in London. Now with more CBS News, here's Jim Taylor.
Medal counts. USA with 24 gold, 49 overall. China has 23 gold, 50 medals overall. The president has a personal message for America's Olympians.
Go get them this week, Team USA. We can't wait to welcome you home.
The president spending his birthday playing golf today before heading to Camp David on Mitt Romney's menu.
The Romney campaign is going to spend next week and the next week all the way leading up to the Republican convention in Tampa trying to burnish his biography, tell more about who he is, what motivates him, and why he would be not only an effective leader, but one for the middle class.
White House correspondents for the National Journal, Major Garrett on CBS This Morning Saturday, says a lot of time is going to be spent on Romney's likability. Oklahoma fire update from Forest Service spokeswoman Michelle Finch Walker.
Our Oklahoma National Guard has 3 helicopters with buckets that are working this fire with water, and they've been able to get us 3 more helicopters today, so that's good news.
Even better news, the arson-suspected fire that's destroyed more than 24 homes under control now. The Afghan parliament voting to dismiss that country's key security lieutenants, and that's not a good trend, according to CBS News Afghanistan consultants Jerry Van Dyke.
If the Afghan army and the Afghan police do not have people in authority who have the backing of the United States and its NATO allies, the war that the United States has fought is not going to end.
2 NATO service members killed in an insurgent attack in eastern Afghanistan today. Syria's largest city remains under siege. Sky News correspondent Stuart Ramsey in Aleppo reporting on the firefight there.
Of them are very realistic in their assessment of the Syrian forces, that once they get themselves together, they are very, very powerful.
Nearly 150 years later, an acknowledgement.
It's believed to be the first of its kind in the nation. Plans have been finalized in Union County, North Carolina, just east of Charlotte, for a granite marker that will honor local slaves who served in the Confederate Army during the Civil War. It will be placed outside the old courthouse in Monroe, in front of a Civil War monument. Historians say it's nearly impossible to know how many black men were forced into military service or followed their owners into battle in the war between the states.
That's Jim Crisula in Greensboro, North Carolina. This is CBS News.
Live from Progressive.
First caller.
Hi, I just broke up with my boyfriend.
I think you called the wrong number, but Progressive.com lets you compare our rates with our competitors. So there are other fish in the sea.
Really?
Yeah, you'll find someone.
No, you can really compare rates at Progressive.com.
Wow, you got over that quickly.
Visit Progressive.com to compare rates and start saving today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Prices vary based on how you buy. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations.
This eczema is driving me crazy. All I do is... No matter what I use on this dry, itchy red skin, I can't stop...
Introducing the first eczema lotion from Cortisone 10. It contains the strongest non-prescription itch medicine to relieve the... Plus 7 moisturizers to help heal severe dry skin. Once you start using it, you'll stop the... For good.
Ah, that's better.
New Cortisone 10 Eczema Lotion. Feel the heal.
4 minutes past the hour, you're listening to AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz. I'm Rick O'Shea with a King of the Hill traffic update. We're going to start with a fire that began at about 8:20 this morning in Northeast Boulder Creek, up Deer Creek Road, close to Ron's Road. Fire department quickly on scene, only burned about 5 to 6 acres. And not much more than that. Cal Fire was managing the blaze. They had one strike team, an engine from Boulder Creek Fire, a couple of Cal Fire systems, engines on scene. No evacuations. That can change, but this late in the game, generally, we're looking at a fine area. Cal Fire did want to make clear that it is a timber brush area. This was a wildfire. No structures were burned, but again, only about 5 to 6 acres up Deer Creek Road and Ron's Road, northeast of Boulder Creek. KSCO traffic very slow, southbound 17 under the limit as you come from San Jose in through Los Gatos, ultimately into Santa Cruz. We're looking at a pretty sluggish commute over the hill, especially at Bayport at 85 connection through Los Gatos. Beach traffic will be heavy today. A lot of people coming into the area to spend their summer here in Santa Cruz. Temperatures will be in the 60s and 70s at the coast, 80s inland. On KSCO, it's now time for Perspectives.
Good afternoon. You've tuned in to the Perspectives Radio Show. My name's Donald Davidson. I'm your host, and joining me in the studio is Dr. Stanley Monteith, otherwise and much more famously known as Dr. Stan. Thanks for joining us today, Dr. Monteith.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Donald.
What a